I grew up in the Mormon Church. Born and raised, as they say. Even during the times of inactivity, I still considered myself to be a true believing Mormon. Times and people change, and when someone pushes you to reevaluate your beliefs, you sometimes realize how wrong you were. 2016 was the year I moved from Mormonville to Heathensburg. I'm Molly Ann Mormon. Welcome to Doubting Dogma, where I explore my new views and new friendships, moving on without religious belief. Good evening from Heathensville, Pennsylvania. This is Doubting Dogma. I'm your host, Molly Ann Mormon, and a year ago was when I met the Cogdis and Scathing crew, and that was just awesome. But anyways, enough of that little trip down memory lane. I am recording a day late, but I figure it's better to record a day late and get something out than not get anything out at all. So I wanted to talk a little bit about some of my history and part of what turned me away from the church so much, this personal slight that I felt like I had, and an article I found on LDS Daily when I was looking for other news about the next church president. And it's on the entertainment page of their, well, the entertainment tab of their page. And it was published on April 1st last year. So obviously it's a spoof piece. It's meant to be, you know, a prank, a joke, whatever. But the fact that they would even write this sort of thing as a joke, I think really highlights part of the problem with it all. So we'll get to that. But a little on my backstory, I'm going to talk a bit about what I talked about when I guested on the Everyone's Agnostic podcast, and that was episode 164. I'll include that in the show notes, so if you haven't listened to my appearance on their show, it'll be available. You know, I grew up in the church. We all know that. I've told you guys that before. And I didn't get married until not even 2 years ago. And given my age when I got married, like that's really late for a Mormon chick to get married. Like, my sister got married at 21. Well, my older sister and my younger sister got married at, oh, I don't know, 24 or something like that. But there's so much pressure in the church to get married. And like when I grew up, that was always the thing, you know. They hammered that point into our heads, you know, before we were even out of primary. So we're still in, you know, the primary classes and stuff when we're primaries from, I want to say, 3 to 11. And, you know, they've got little primary songs about temple marriage and families are forever and this kind of thing. And they stress even then that that's the only acceptable place to go and get married. And they talk about, well, you know, this person was gonna get married in the church and gonna get married in the temple, but then they decided to marry someone outside of the temple, or they didn't live righteously, so they couldn't go to the temple, so they decided to have a civil ceremony instead. And then on the way to the reception, they got in a car accident and they were killed, and now they'll forever be lost and won't be able to go to the celestial kingdom, all because they didn't have a temple marriage first, blah blah blah. So this is the sort of the thing that they really tried to drill into our heads. And I remember for a while my older sister was dating a non-member She was in college. I was still, I want to say, like a junior in high school. And, like, it made me and my little sister just so sad because we were so worried about her and all this kind of stuff. Because we'd been brainwashed into feeling like that was the only way. And she was lost because, you know, she was dating this non-member. And what if she decided to marry him and everything? And I look back at it and I am just absolutely ashamed of the way that I was thinking and the way that I acted. And then, so when I went to college, I was in the singles ward. When I joined the Army and I started going to the singles branch down in El Paso, there were, it was a Hispanic area. And in the Hispanic culture, you know, it's very heavily Catholic. And even those in the church that aren't Catholic, I mean, there's still that same culture that family is everything. And I'm not saying that it's not everything in the Mormon church, but it's different somehow there in the Hispanic community. And they had a hard time getting some of the singles to quit going to their family ward and to go to the singles ward. And the whole purpose of the singles ward, let's face it, they're trying to play matchmaker. And the purpose is they want you going to the young single adult ward so that you can meet other Mormons your age and get married. Because then it'll be in the temple and, you know, all the happy little stuff that they want you to believe. And I mean, I found it really difficult there because not only was I was in the Army, so I already didn't seem to fit into other singles my age. But then, you know, I was, you know, like the one of the whitest people there because it was, I mean, it's a border town. It's right next to Mexico. I could see Juarez across the river there when I was driving on the interstate on my way to work. So, I mean, I felt like I was out of place. And so, I don't know, it took me a long time to even adjust to being there. And given the difficulties that I had with sexuality and everything, well, difficulties by church standards, I mean, I didn't feel like I fit in. And the fact that I was I'm very shy and introverted, and I didn't like talking to people because if I don't know them already, it's very difficult for me to make friends. I still have problems with that. And so it seemed like the few times that I got asked on a date by someone there at church, I was bound to be disappointed. And one of them that I went on a date with was a member of the church, and he was also a member of the military. And so, I mean, I thought he would relate more fully to what I was going through because he was also in the same sort of environment. But, I mean, it completely shattered me. It shattered me emotionally because, I mean, first date and he's there trying to fill me up and do things that, you know, Mormon boys weren't supposed to do. And that absolutely crushed me. And it was a while before I dated another man from the church. And when I did, this was the one that, I mean, I knew that he had had his own past because he had fallen away from the church after his mom died. He had these problems that he was trying to get over. And so I had thought that if anyone wasn't going to judge me, it would be him. And I was mistaken, because even though we were sitting there and we were talking about maybe putting in mission papers and us each going on a mission at the same time, and then when we'd get back, we could, you know, get married or something like that. But, I mean, he had a sex addiction, and I know some people, like, scoff at that term and say, well, we're biological creatures, whatever, but I think there's a difference between having a libido and a sex drive versus it completely consuming you and you ruin relationships because of it. And because he knew that I wasn't a virgin, it seemed like he was upset that I was trying to set my life back on the Mormon course, and I was trying to obey the commandments. And in essence, without using the words, but he basically implied that I was a whore for having slept with someone else, but then I wouldn't sleep with him. And like, that was the straw that broke the camel's back when I decided I'm never dating another member of the church. And it wasn't too long after that, I bought my house, moved to the other side of town. I was only in the singles ward for a couple more years. And then I had to, because I was too old at that point, I had to go to a family ward, because we didn't have a single adult ward, which is for those 31 and up who are still single, because we didn't have enough of them. And so I had to go to the family ward, and it was so weird. And I mean, I felt almost alienated because I felt like I didn't belong, you know? I'm here, the only that I know of single sister in the ward, and, you know, surrounded by all the families, and nobody knows me, and I'm just this weird anomaly that's just there. And it was so uncomfortable for me. And it was one of those times when I had been trying to go back to church that I really just started feeling more and more like, this just isn't for me. I don't belong here. So, I mean, they called me to be one of the Cub Scout leaders for Weeblos, which they're the oldest boys before they graduate on to Boy Scouts. So I want to say they were the 10-year-olds, if I remember right. And after I got that calling, I mean, I was still attending church for a little while, and then I stopped attending church. But I would still go to Scouts, and I would still see my boys. And they were wonderful. I loved working with them. And one of the things since leaving the church that I really don't like is the fact that unless you have a church association, you can't be a leader with the Scouts. And if you're a nun, if you have no religious affiliation at all, then from my understanding, you can't even be a Scout. Yeah, not liking that. Not to mention the Scouts' history of bigotry, but we're not getting into that right now. But yeah, so I kept doing that up until I moved to Pennsylvania. I guess part of what I'm trying to say is, I mean, anytime I try and explain to people the idea of the singles ward, I mean, it's just, it's so foreign to them because I guess other churches don't do that. They don't stress so extremely much that you're supposed to strictly mingle with only the people of that church. And it's easy to see from the outside that the singles ward is strictly there as a matchmaking service, basically, for the singles. And that brings me back to this article in the LDS Daily. I will include this in the show notes, but I wanted to read this and we can go over it a little bit as I go. But like I said, it was published on April 1st last year, so obviously not a real article, especially since I can't find this mentioned anywhere else except this. So it says, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints made an unprecedented announcement in a small press conference prior to the opening session of General Conference on Saturday. After much consideration and debate, the Church has decided to phase out singles wards entirely, with all members attending traditional congregations, announced John S. Young, former LDS single and current head of the Latter-day Saint Marriage and Matchmaking Department of the Church. Okay, now, first off, I have never heard of the Marriage and Matchmaking Department of the Church. So, obviously, tongue-in-cheek, but the very fact that, I mean, I know it's supposed to be satire, but the very fact that they are poking fun of this and blatantly saying what it is, but they don't want to actually call it, it really just highlights the problem of all this, I think, personally. And, okay, it continues. The brethren have unanimously agreed that it was time to stop making our bishops play matchmaker and for the church to officially retract President Brigham Young's Menace to Society statement. Okay, so those not familiar with it, there is a quote that is attributed to Brigham Young, though when I was searching for it, I couldn't find it anywhere. So it's unknown if this is a real quote or if this is just Mormon urban legend. But Brigham Young supposedly said that any man who was 25 and still single was a menace to society, though there are other versions of the quote that say 21 and 27. So, I mean, you can see how it's hard to nail down this quote when it's already got so many versions of it. But, I mean, I grew up hearing that sort of thing. I grew up hearing, you know, the Menace to Society. Steve Young, who was the quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers when I was a kid, and he is like a great, great, great grandson of Brigham Young or something like that. I'm not sure how many greats, but he's a descendant of Brigham Young. I mean, he didn't get married until his 30s at some point. But when he was still single, he had made a joke that, you know, according to his however many great-grandfather, that he was a menace to society because he wasn't married. So, I mean, it's deeply embedded in Mormon culture, even if it's not a real quote. And this is, oh my gosh, it's so, So harmful. Anyways, okay, so the article continues. The brief meeting took place with a small group of local and national reporters, as well as stake young single adult representatives in what will go down as a historic day in LDS church history. The YSA reps promptly took their personal electronic devices to start spreading the word through their social media accounts. Brother Young continued, saying, "My great-great-grandfather Brigham made the Menace statement well before the days of important goals like high-paying summer sales jobs and binge-watching The Bachelor. The church is speedily moving into the 21st century, and this is part of that change. We are going to let singles take life at their own pace." Now, this is another clue, if you will, proof that this is very much a satire article, because, I mean, the church loves to harp on the fact that, you know, the high-paying jobs and the TV shouldn't take precedent over your church spiritual callings and all this kind of stuff. I mean, when you go on the mission, you don't get paid and you have to pay for it. So obviously they don't really give a damn about the high-paying summer sales jobs. And again, with all that, the Ten Commandments and everything, where they'd say, "Thou shalt have no other god but me," and they always like to bring up in church that anything else, if it's not the Lord, can be considered a god, and you can prioritize things, and you can make this so important that it's like its own religion and whatever. So, I mean, yeah, obviously, this is just a load of bunk. And it says, "The popular statement by Brigham Young was not part of official church doctrine, but had made the rounds through Mormon myth websites and even into several YSA Ward Sunday school lessons. The phrase was used by both grandmothers and mothers alike in an effort to persuade their male offspring to get serious about finding their eternal companions." That is probably the truest statement in this article, but we've already been over that. So it continues, "The church will begin to transition hundreds of thousands of LDS singles around the world into corresponding family wards and branches in areas with heavy single member populations like Provo, Utah, and Southern California. Families with three children or more will be assigned to attend singles clusters in an effort to excite the unmarried Latter-day Saints to start their own families, but forever ending quiet sacrament meetings." And if, I don't know, if there's anything to discourage them to do that, I think it would be, yeah, let's put them in the same room with a bunch of screaming kids. But yeah, that's one thing that I know when I was attending the singles ward, they always prided themselves on, was they would say, "Oh, the spirit is so much stronger here than in the other wards because it's so quiet and there's no screaming kids and this kind of stuff." So yeah, they're doing some more poking fun at that. So, "We will be rolling out several additional changes in an effort to help singles continue to interact with one another once their singles ward has been closed down. This includes munch and mingles hosted by the primary with leftover nursery treats and new church callings, including a ward matchmaker and family home evening singles ringleaders." It's just so much nonsense. Except for the family home evening singles ringleaders. Like, they didn't call them that, but in the singles wards, you would still have family home evening. Now, for those that don't know, which is probably most of y'all, family home evening was something that you would do on Monday nights, and it was just your family, and it typically, at least for my family, it would include a lesson by somebody in the family we'd like rotate around, and or some sort of activity. So it was like just family time. And we'd always open it with prayer and have it scripture and then, you know, do whatever and then that sort of thing. But in the singles ward, because you're there away from family, they would still have family home evening, and they would just call it FHE, you know, because we like acronyms, I guess. But they would break you down into little, air quotes, families, and you would have a man and a woman who were the head of this, air quotes, family, right? So that was your FHE mom and dad, right? And it's hard to understand, but like, you'd kind of, for FHE, you'd all show up to, well, when I was in college, it was at the Institute building, so we'd go there, we'd meet up as a ward, and then we'd sometimes break off into our little families. And so then whoever the mom and dad for this little family group was, they would plan something for that week's activity, and you'd go and do that. And it was so weird, especially now that I'm talking about it and trying to explain it. I mean, it just sounds so foreign now. But, I mean, it was a thing we did. It was... I don't even know where to go with that. And then it says, the millennial love for social media has also been considered. Brother Young continued, in addition, the church IT department has developed a Tinder-style app called Choose the Righteous, which allows singles to swipe right on their interested matches. The app will seamlessly be integrated into the LDS Tools app. And it shows this phone screen, and it has the little CTR shield, and it's, oh my gosh, it's so ridiculous. In the areas where awkward or uncomfortable dating experiences have taken place, the church will allow both males and females to request an emergency transfer, in which case they will be relocated to a neighboring ward branch unit. Okay, yeah, that doesn't happen. Transfers must be approved by both the bishop and the ward matchmaker after a council with both parties. In addition, the church is doing away with the term mid-singles in an effort to provide more intermingling regardless of age. And that must be a term just there in Utah, where there's a high concentration of Mormons, because mid-singles is not something we ever had anywhere else. So, we are confident this change will better accommodate the busy lives of LDS singles around the world and help them feel less pressure to tie the knot. I don't ever see them doing anything to make less pressure to get married. I mean, that's all they do. That's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to get married and then just pop out a bunch of little Mormon babies. Yeah, so the last little paragraph, it just says the transition process will start in the United States immediately and are expected to roll out to the rest of the world in the coming months. Individuals with questions or concerns are encouraged to take them to their family home evening moms and dads. So, yeah, I mean, it's just the most ridiculous thing, but the fact that it is, and the fact that they even go and make fun of it, I think really, really highlights the problem of the whole thing and the whole situation and the environment the Mormon Church has and the attitude they have towards marriage and the fact that everybody has to get married right now. And yeah, so I'd be interested in hearing what you guys think. But it's seriously just the most awkward thing, and just so, I don't even have words for it. but the whole attitude towards marriage and the church and the way that they treat you if you don't get married in the church and the way they treat you if, say, your sister is getting married in the temple and you're too young or you're not a temple recommend holder and you have to sit outside. I mean, it's such a toxic environment. So I'm gonna not bring up some of that because I really don't feel like crying on you guys. And there's still a lot of pain and resentment that I am still harboring on these subjects. Probably why I keep bringing them up. So, sorry if you didn't want to hear about the horrors of Mormon dating. But, yeah, there's the vile truth of what Mormons think is a April Fool's joke. But it points out the whole problem that the church even has. Well, one of the problems. There's no way to point out all of them, but we're trying. So, on that note, I'm gonna quit talking about that for a second. I just want to thank all my patrons. You guys are awesome. And I put this up on my website there. I am considering a new Patreon reward for some of the higher levels. It is a handmade piece of jewelry by me. It is wire wrapped and it is an Atheist A pendant. So go to the Facebook page and check that out. See if that's something you'd be interested in. Probably going to do that a little later. And then I want to thank you all for even taking the time to listen to me. So, if you have any suggestions for topics, anything you want to hear me talk about, any questions about the Mormon Church, just send me an email and I will address it. I will bring it up on the show. So, thank you all for listening and good night. I want to thank you for joining us. If you like what you hear, please consider supporting the show on Patreon at patreon.com/doubtingdogma or leave a review on iTunes. You can follow the show on Facebook at facebook.com/doubtingdogma or on Twitter at doubtingdogma. The intro music was written and performed by Marissa Alexa McCool and was used with her permission.